Hi, everyone. I'm Gail Rosenbarton, curator of the Jewish Heritage Collection here at the College of Charleston, and was invited to moderate this panel. I noticed in Hollis's fabulous handouts a startling absence of women. I mean, not only were there no South Carolinians and no North Carolinians, the only woman is Debbie Wasserman Schultz. So I'm especially proud to be the moderator of a panel of women who have run for and been elected to office in the state of South Carolina. What we're going to do, I'm going to do a brief biographical intro. You'll recognize it, those of you who've read the newsletter. This comes right out of our newsletter. For each speaker in turn, ask them to make a 10 to 15 minute presentation. We've completely left it up to them. I'm sure they'll tell you a little bit about their run for office. I have a short list of provocative questions that I'll pitch at our panelists, but mainly we would like this to become a dialogue with the audience. So put your thinking caps on. Anything that occurs to you while we're presenting, please write down, make a note that you'd like to ask a question, because that will be very helpful in terms of focusing this discussion on what you're interested in and what you want to know. We're going to start, this is alphabetical, with Susan Brill, born in Columbia, South Carolina. Susan earned her BA in history with a minor in secondary education. In 1997, she was elected to Richland County Council. Then in November 2000, was re-elected for four more years. Susan won election to the Richland County District 2 School Board in 2006 and again in 2008, and currently serves as vice chair. She's been president of the Historic Columbia Foundation, the Spring Valley High School Education Foundation, and the Columbia Medical Society Auxiliary. A lifetime member of the Tree of Life congregation, Susan and her husband, Dr. Alan Brill, have four children, Vanessa, Lindsay, Keith, and David, and three grandsons. I introduce Susan Brill.
Thank you very much. Can you all hear me? It's a pleasure to be here. This has been a great program today. Really appreciate being a part of it. And thank you, Dale, for setting all this up and organizing it. And it's such a privilege. I want to thank some of my family members that are here. My husband, Alan Brill, he took off Saturday. He's here. My sister, Anna, drove from Columbia. Thank you for being here. And my daughter's in the doorway with my grandson, Louis Isaac. They're here, and her husband, Joe Kligman. So it's nice to have a family here. And then many of you are friends from growing up, friends from Temple Youth. I guess you could say I'm a country Jew. I'm from Columbia. But I have to tell you the truth, I have ties to Charleston and Mount Pleasant. A couple of my cousins, Laurie Walden and Frank Baker, did genealogy research on my grandfather's family. And they were the Bakers. They were originally Beckers, and they came from Zolmodar, Poland, about 1884, and my understanding is that they were the first Jews in Mount Pleasant, but Dale says, no, they weren't. So that's okay. They thought they were. They had a wonderful business and home at the corner of Pitt and King Streets. It's a beautiful house that's there now, been redone. It looks, we go by and take pictures and we love it. They took the ferry from Mount Pleasant to Charleston. They went to synagogue here. And the other exciting news is they had relatives in Charleston, and that's why they came from Poland. And they were related to the Kratowskis, who were also from Zabludow. And they were related to Rebecca Resnick. She was a Solomon. And she was Helene Kligman's grandmother, Joey. I didn't know that, but they had 10 children. And that means that anything I want to run for, I might be able to get elected because I have so many cousins. I have cousins everywhere. And they're very supportive of me, and I certainly appreciate that. So that's the good thing about having lots of relatives. So I'm really proud of my connection. They were a little bit like Walmart. They went into small communities and set up businesses, mercantile stores, Ellery, Lone Star, Estill. So Jake Baker, my grandfather, lived in Estill, and they stayed there till the Depression came, and he really lost everything and moved to Columbia. And so my mother grew up in Columbia, and she and her brothers, I don't know if you all know Dave and Lee Baker, became very involved in the community in Columbia. And I would say it's about giving back. They were very involved in politics and cultural life and civic life. And I had understood that Dave Baker thought he would run for governor, and he was very active in the Democratic Party, and instead he supported people who did. And so it was just nice, you know, knowing that connection. My parents were very active. My dad was president of the temple. My mother was sisterhood all the time. Susan Daniel knows what that means. Altman. So their activity in the community was probably something that we were a part of, and certainly appreciated. So from the time that I was very young, I was engaged in activities at my school. I went early, I stayed late, and it was just part of what we did. And so I enjoyed that activity. When I went to high school, I was elected to Girls State, and then I got in the runoff for governor against another girl from Columbia. And when we had 2 minutes to do that speech, I said to myself, what am I going to say? Because it was a runoff. And I could not think of anything except my dad always said, glad I'm living and lucky to be. And so that was my speech. Yeah, and everybody loved it. And so, you know, it was fortunate to have won that election. So at that time, I met Senator Strom Thurmond. I had to introduce him at an event at Boys State. So I was in college, and I wrote a letter to his office. Dear Senator Thurmond, do you remember me? And I got it, and I said, I would love to come to Washington and work for you. I'll sweep the floor, take out the trash. I don't care. And I get a letter back. Thank you so much, but Miss South Carolina is coming. Thanks for more. I said, oh, I understand. And of course, back then it was before email, and so a telegram. I got a telegram in my dorm. Raced down. I said, a telegram from Washington, and it was a telegram from Strom Thurmond saying, will you come work for me? Nancy is coming a little later. So that was the beginning of my experience and exposure on a national scene, and I did truly love it. It was exciting, it was a lot of action, a lot of things going on. So here's a Jewish girl in a Republican office working in Washington and, you know, enjoying it. So, you know, I don't want to take up a lot of time because I only have 10 minutes. But I did get married, and I had 4 children. And so during that time, I traveled the world with junior tennis, and I got to see my children mature and play a lot of tennis. I watched enough tennis that I don't even watch tennis on TV anymore. But my youngest son started to drive, David, and I turned 50. And I was reading in the newspaper about members of county council taking a trip to Hawaii and coming back with no information, no report, not even a thank you. And I thought, you know, that was really very arrogant of them. And so, you know, that just sort of made me like, well, who would be a representative and act like that? And also, I lived in the northeast part of Richland County, and all of that was changing. Trees were coming down, growth was coming, and no one was there speaking out for, you know, protection of neighborhoods or protection of the environment. No one seemed to care. You know, it was business as usual. It was the good old boys system. So I followed the run, and I had never been to a county council meeting. But, you know, I figured I could make a difference. And I was involved in a lot of, you know, different groups in the area, so I knew a lot of people. So I did get a lot of support. I did file to run a Republican primary. And the gentleman that I was running against was known to be fairly racist. So I did get a lot of checks from Democrats, Richard Harpootlian, for one. So, and you know, I just was really amazed. I don't know if people knew me or knew what I represented, but you know, it looked like I would be open and it would be change. for sure. So I was successful. I beat the incumbent in the primary, and then beat another incumbent, a Democrat lady, in November. So I served my first term, and I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed being part of the action, knowing what was going on, and helping people, helping neighborhoods, giving people a voice that does not have a voice. I take my job very seriously, I always have, return every phone call, every email. I let people know that I really care. So, and I ran again for re-election in the year 2000, and I was successful, and then by then David was in college, so that was good. And my husband was home alone at night. pretty good about that. So what happened after 2004, Joel Lurie vacated his House seat, and I did file and ran for that seat as well. And I ended up in a runoff against a good friend of mine, someone that I had promoted and asked and encouraged also to run for county council. And I did lose in the runoff for that seat. And I just remembered what, you know, one of my dad's favorite expressions is, life is full of appointments and disappointments, and it's how you handle them that matters. So I was a big girl. I hadn't lost before, but I knew I could handle it. And I actually was in Florida visiting my sister, and my other sister called and said, you know what? A guy got in trouble on school board, and there's an open seat, Richland 2, which is, you know, the area that I lived in. So I filed to run for that seat. There were 9 other candidates, and I came out on top of that, and I've been doing that ever since. And it really is a great place for me. It's nonpartisan race, so I don't have to be pushed and pulled, and it's just a lot easier for a Jewish female being a nonpartisan race, I guess. But I've enjoyed it tremendously. And once again, I'm doing what I love. I'm helping people, helping children now. I know a lot about the district because my kids went through there. So it's been really a pleasure. And I think that's about it.
I knew I was going to be impressed by my panelists, but I'm even more impressed. So we'll just go on with presentations with Diane and Belinda, and then come back and start again with questions and answers. Diane Cohen is a member of the Darlington City Council, currently serving her 3rd term. She received a BA in chemistry from Metropolitan State College of Denver and an MA in journalism from the University of South Carolina. She worked for 9 years in the textile industry and another 7 as adjunct instructor of mass communication at Francis Marion University. Her writing has been published in periodicals and newspapers regionally. Diane serves as a trustee of Beth Israel Congregation in Florence, South Carolina. She and her husband, Dr. Alex Cohen, have 2 college-aged children, David and Ginny. Here's Diane.
Good afternoon. My husband Alex, in that back corner, likes to quip that not only am I a Jewish woman serving in elected office in a small southern town, but I'm also a northerner. And though I've lived in the South for 28 years, I don't sound like I feel at home here, although I do actually feel at home in South Carolina. And really love South Carolina and love being in Charleston as well. So my story of how I got from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania to being on the city council in the metropolis of Darlington is a little unusual. But I actually moved to the South to work in the textile industry, which is something like the schmuck's business. I was in North Carolina working for Burlington Industries, which was at the time just a big name, at least to me it was. And I was in a training program there. I had a choice of a number of different textile facilities throughout the South that I could go to when I was through my training program. And I chose to come to the PD region, the Northeast region of South Carolina, because I liked the plant there, which was in Society Hill, which is in Darlington County. And liked the area a lot, and also could afford a house there. So people are still moving to the Florence area for that reason, housing affordability, as they are throughout certain areas of the South. But here I was, a single person, pushing toward 30 at least, and I wanted to have a house. That was just one of those little milestones I wanted to meet. So I moved here, worked hard at the plant, and joined the synagogue in Florence, South Carolina. Pretty much did that right away, and was really taken in by the hospitality of the people there. And we have some members also from Florence, Judy and Dr. Ken Kammerer are back there next to my husband, and you were part of the hospitality event because you were there before me. Had a lot of what I used to call surrogate mothers, surrogate grandmothers. Unfortunately, things have changed now. I'm more the surrogate mother. But one of those surrogate mothers actually introduced Alex to me. Anyway, I wanted to be active in the community. At the time, that meant the Jewish community. And I was roped into major roles with the local Hadassah chapter, and which was actually great. And also taught religious school, served as secretary on the board. There was plenty of work to do. Many of you know what that's like. Well, the surrogate mother that introduced me to Alex was trying to brag that she was the one who put us together. Other people were trying to take credit. But as time went by, we eventually did get married, of course, and decided Alex was finishing his residency. Where are we going to put out our shingle where he can practice his family medicine? And decided together we would come back to his hometown of Darlington. We were both in Florence, moved to the next town 20 minutes away. And this is where Alex grew up. He's fifth generation Darlington, and his parents live there. And I will say, I married a nice man, but I also married a very nice family. So I was happy to live in that town with his wonderful parents, and a town that I really liked very much. Just a southern town, Spanish moss, beautiful trees, kind people, albeit the city was really declining, and that was very apparent. So continued to work at the textile plant, which it was really hard on my feet, that I remember. But enjoyable work, you know, endlessly diverse tasks to be done, great people to work with. But after having our first child, our son David, as soon as he was born, I just said then and there, you know, forget the full time. I mean, I cannot, with his job and my job, I just wasn't going to be able to raise this son in the style that I wanted to raise him. So luckily, I was able to do part-time, which lasted for a couple of years at the textile plant. And I was, meanwhile, while I would be strolling little David around the neighborhood, trying to regroup for what am I going to do next with my life, other than the family thing. And knew I'd like to write, and knew I was interested in public affairs. I was a big consumer of news, as I still am. So equipped myself with some courses in political science at Francis Marion University, writing courses, and then I went on to get the master's degree at University of South Carolina in journalism, and actually did my thesis on certain public interest groups, which was great because I was, you know, very interested in public affairs. And later on, I did engage in a little activism, and knowing a little bit about pressure groups didn't hurt. So during the years ahead, once I had that degree, I had what was sort of like a dream job, not dream career, but kind of a dream job that I thought about when I would be strolling David through the neighborhood. And that was actually writing at the community newspaper in Darlington. I mean, that's so far from lofty. But to me, I just thought it would just be so great. And I enjoyed the civic involvement, the Hadassah, the Jewish stuff. Well, that wasn't civic, but that kind of volunteer stuff. But I did kind of want to be part of the general community. I wanted to participate in the general community as well. So I did continue with my activities with the synagogue, and that's definitely one of the most enjoyable, rewarding parts of my life and our life together. But I got very active in the community library. First it was Friends of the Library, later Library Board. Was with the YMCA, a Christian organization. But it was just wonderful to be getting a branch of the Y in our little town that really needed some good things to be going on. So I was on the Capital Campaign Committee for the Y. League of Women Voters, tutoring, mentoring, these types of things. And in the meantime, meeting a lot of people and getting to know, you know, how things work in the town, in the county, the school district, etc. So one thing during those years is that I did speak at some county council meetings on a few occasions, you know, just as a citizen, and we attended a few meetings. Alex joined me sometimes. There were a few things that I felt strongly enough about to either write about them or stand up and speak about them or whatever. Then it just a certain amount of fight about in my spirit about a few things that came up. And also at that time, we had a small group for a little while in our house. Alex and I would invite a few people that also were concerned about Darlington, that loved it, thought it was, you know, just had such a great heritage, but saw this terrible decline, kind of a maybe lack of leadership a little bit. And so we would get together and try to brainstorm for, you know, on several occasions. I can't say we really got too far, but, you know, that was, it was an interest and an intent, was to try to improve things a little bit. Also, not long after that was my period, I mentioned activism, or pressure groups. A farmer got a permit to locate a hog farm in Darlington County. And even though that hog farm was going to be 8 miles from my house, I somehow got very, you know, concerned about that, because I wanted to ensure that we could still have a bright future in Darlington County. And the idea that a hog farm would locate here made certain leaders in the county feel like they like to cluster, and that means that more hog farms will come, will follow closely, within close proximity. And I was afraid this would threaten the idea of a brighter future. And I was grouped with many, many people that lived much closer to the hog farm, who were very emotional about the issue. And we had great leadership, some attorneys, we had conservationists. It all came together, and I honestly do think that the way that thing turned out, which is that we won and the hog farm didn't get to locate there, we won in the courts, that this kind of was maybe the major event that took place that caused us not to be a hog farm state, because this some of course there were some in the General Assembly that wanted the hog farm. They were involved with agriculture. They at least publicly said they wanted it. But when it all turned out, you know, with the state at the county level, that we became not a hog farm state and not a hog farm county. And thank you, South Carolina Coastal Conservation League. But that was quite an experience, and it was a terrific distraction from family life, which is one of the things Dale mentioned we might want to talk about, is political activity. You know, how did it affect our family life? Well, I was probably putting 20 hours a week in on this, mostly on the phone, on this hog farm situation. And Alex, he really sacrificed at that time. And the kids, you know, it was, luckily it was, didn't last but a matter of weeks, maybe months, but so that was an interesting experience, being part of a pressure group. I don't know if I would ever have the fight in me again to be as involved, but that also kind of helped some of the local people get to know me. And meanwhile, I still had this kind of a fire in the belly, as they would say, passion about the city of Darlington, and I don't know why, but it's just a real concern for the place, and those in public office probably know just what I mean, as well as many of you understanding that. So 2003 was an election year for the mayor and city council, and I didn't know who was running, but I know we needed some good, you know, good people to run, basically. So I remember calling the mayor at the time, and he didn't know of anyone running, and nobody seemed to know of anybody running. And I wasn't really planning to run, but I just knew that we needed some, you know, reasonably, and this is all relative, capable people to be, block that out. Don't even include that on the tape recorder. So I just found my feet walking me into the city hall in Darlington during that filing period, the end of August, with my checkbook. I wrote my $35 check. I was a little surprised. The form was very minimal. What office? Check the office, city council. How do you want your name to appear in the ballot? Diane Cohen, you know, period. And anyway, that was all that was involved. And it's been a very interesting ride, very frustrating at times, very gratifying, and that would be the overall, you know, sentiment. I'm now in my ninth year on the council and just was elected to my third term. That initial ability to win as the northerner, the polite term, female, that's Jewish, that had to do with a few things. You know, timing is really a big deal when you run for office. You could be, you know, the best candidate in the world, but, you know, there's other people that were already in your seat, or there's all kinds of things. So it was a good time because there were two county city council people that were vacating their seats, so there were open seats, and so that worked out well. And what I would call generations, that was also because Alex's parents, Kathleen and David Cohen of blessed memory, were fine people, very had lots of friends in the town, very well, you know, acquainted with a large number of people that lived in the town. And so people knew that name Cohen when they saw the yard sign sitting there with the name Cohen. They knew Captain David Cohen. Or they might have known Alex or one of his three siblings who all grew up, went to school there. So that helped. Or they might have been a patient of Dr. Cohen's, my husband, or knew people that were, you know, other family members went to Dr. Cohen. So some people knew me and still know me, you know, Dr. Cohen's wife. And increasingly people knew me because of my different civic activities. So that's pretty much how it worked out that I did get elected. I'm happy to say I was the top vote getter in all three of the elections that I've run in. And it's an at-large seat. So the first time there were seven people running for the office, the second time there were, I think, maybe five, and the last time there were four. The third time there were four. But that being at large has been great, and if anybody is interested and wants to ask, you know, I can tell you why I think it's so neat to not just represent people that are a lot like me, but to represent the whole city, most of those people with whom are not like me. So that's been very interesting, very eye-opening. It's been a good experience to deepen my compassion for people, totally getting a better idea of what people are going through, what matters, how the Black community operates, what's important to them, you know, all of that. So it's actually, I think, strengthened me morally. You know, you have to, you know, I feel it's more important I do the right thing. I have to set an example. And, you know, it becomes really a very, very nice thing when you learn that how great it is to be doing things right. And, gee, even though nobody's watching, I'm going to do things the way I think they should be done. So I think being in that office, you know, has been helpful for that. And I just want to kind of, as one of my last things, say that the Judaism that I practice has been just terrific. And Alex and I is something we really enjoy. Alex is on the national board of the Union for Reformed Judaism. So very pleasantly, I get to accompany him, not just so much the board meetings, but to these conventions and biennials, and I just enjoy, I've grew up conservative, it meant a lot to me, the religious school was actually fairly decent, and so that's been a pleasure. So, but I hope that, you know, once things keep going, if you have anything you want to ask about, that's fine. It doesn't have to be, gee, you mentioned this, what's that? You may want to ask about, did somebody help me with my elections, or whatever anybody wants to know. You know, I would encourage you to ask. Thank you.
Thanks.
Tell y'all, when we started talking by email a couple weeks ago about what the topics we covered in the panel, I sent them basically a laundry list going from literally birth to the latest election. And Susan wrote back and said, it would be a challenge to cover all those subjects even in a two-day seminar. So I'm not sure. But anyway, everybody's doing a great job and really hitting some very wonderful high points. I don't mean to sound biased here, but I do think it's one of the advantages of women speakers is that somehow people are more willing to be personal and talk about, you know, their own feelings. Anyway, Belinda F. Gergel, who I'm sure is known to everyone in this audience, is a native South Carolinian with a passionate love of the history of her home state. I should say, parenthetically, Belinda is a very passionate person in all regards, not just about the history of South Carolina. Following graduation from Columbia College in 1972, she earned an MED and a PhD from Duke University, where her graduate work focused on women's higher education in the early 20th century South. After a short teaching stint at C.A. Johnson High School, Belinda went on to spend most of her professional career as a professor and college administrator at Columbia College. Since her retirement in 2001, she has focused her attention on scholarship and civic service, culminating in her election to the Columbia City Council in April 2008. In 1996, Belinda and her husband, attorney Richard Gergel, whom we heard from this morning, published In Pursuit of the Tree of Life, A History of the Early Jews of Columbia, South Carolina, and the Tree of Life Congregation. More recently, she co-edited Matthew J. Perry, The Man, His Times, and His Legacy. She served from 2003 to 2005 as president of the board of directors of the Historic Columbia Foundation. Belinda is a devoted gardener and a member of the board of trustees of Brook Green Gardens, the Southern Garden Historical Society, and Columbia Green. The Gergels have two sons, Richie, who's a graduate student in journalism at Columbia University, and Joseph, who's a senior at New York University.
Thank
Here's
you.
Belinda Gergel.
Thank you.
You know, the stories that we have heard today have been so personal and so incredibly moving. And I think all of us are reminded the importance of communicating the special experiences that we have had in this wonderful South Carolina history. It is a real pleasure for me to come today. I have, Richard and I have probably been to more meetings at the South Carolina Jewish Historical Society. Just about anyone with the exception of Dale and Marty back there and Barbara back there and a couple of other folks who've been so involved. But it has been, the Jewish Historical Society has been a real part, can we hear?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Of our lives, and it certainly, we've got to continue to work very diligently to build this society. And Rachel, I congratulate you and others who've been so involved with this program, because it's a great program. My trajectory into politics, if you will, or public service is the way I like to describe it. It's a little bit different. I grew up in Rock Hill and was not raised in the Jewish faith. When I came to Columbia, though, and met my husband, Richard. My identity with the South Carolina, with the Columbia Jewish community began, and the South Carolina Jewish history and with the South Carolina Jewish community really became a very fundamental part of my life. My grandfather was Jewish, and I have had a great, wonderful experience over the last, particularly 10 years, taking a look at his story and the nuances of that story and how that has shaped me. But it really was with my introduction to my husband, our courting, and ultimately our marriage, that I became identified with the South Carolina and especially the Columbia Jewish community. And when I married into this family, I got to know people like Susan and Ina, folks like Alan Brill is here, Alan Reiner is here today. I actually had met Alan before then. Both my sister and I were hoping he might ask us out. And we had known him down at the beach. But coming into this community in Columbia was simply wonderful. And there are a couple of folks here today that I'm looking at Arlene and Jerry at Tree of Life, who were such a part of our early life and our continued married life, the lives of our children in Columbia. But Tree of Life became our home. Richard had grown up in that congregation. We identified very closely with it. He served as president of the congregation. And as any wife in here who's been married to a president of a congregation knows, it is a joint job. But clearly, as I moved into my middle years, I became, I think, identified as a person very active in Columbia's Jewish community. Richard and I joined hands and decided in 1993 that we wanted to take a look at the history of our congregation. And we had a wonderful experience uncovering new things about the story of Tree of Life and what it meant to Columbia and ultimately to South Carolina. And we learned then about a history and tradition of public service by Columbia Jews. We learned that we had our first Jewish member of the city council elected, as Richard mentioned, in 1828. Learned that we had Jewish mayors before the Civil War. Through Richard, I became acquainted with the wonderful, wonderful work of the Rubin family in Columbia, Senator Hyman Rubin, but especially with the work of the Lurie family as well. And Joel will be on the program tomorrow. But got introduced to this very active engagement in the community that Columbia's Jews had, and especially folks connected to Richard's family had had. Let me also say, I remember as we were looking at the story of Tree of Life, our congregation, Susan, I remember coming across a fabulous picture of you, and it was you at the airplane. I guess it was Girl State. But we were trying to collect those stories that said something special about our community, our city, and finding those and getting that story out was really comprised much of the activities I was involved in the Jewish community in the 90s. We had a wonderful celebration in 1996. We had the centennial of our congregation, and boy, did we whoop it up. That's when I got to know this girl sitting right over here. And actually, I knew her before then, but hadn't worked with her. And we called Rachel, probably around 95, and we said, Rachel, we want all of Columbia to know about this great story that we have to tell about Jews in our community. This story of America, this story of South Carolina, this story of Columbia. And so we actually got Rachel to help shape that story. And I will tell you, I don't think there could have been 10 people in Columbia who did not know that we were celebrating our 100th anniversary as a congregation, and who did not know that Jews had been in Columbia for a long time and had helped shape the story of our city. So my identity in the Jewish community was augmented, I think, by my involvement in non-Jewish organizations. As Dale mentioned, I love history, love the stories that we have to tell. And I became very active with the Historic Columbia Foundation. And as I'm sure many of you from Charleston are very much aware, once you get into issues of historic preservation, you touch all kinds of hot spots, okay? And so somewhere around that time, we moved from the suburbs into the city. And shortly after we moved into the core of the city, I became president of the Historic Columbia Foundation. And we realized that we were getting ready to lose possibly two structures that happened to be three blocks down the street from me. And so we became very active in talking with city officials, helping other community leaders understand the importance of preserving those things that tell our unique story. And we began to work with city council because the only way those structures would be saved would be to have them declare local landmarks, to give them that designation. And so sort of jumped in through Historic Columbia into a more active engagement with city politics and continued to teach. We had two boys that we spent a tremendous amount of time with, and that have cost us a fortune. But in any event, as they went off to college, I retired from Columbia College, did a little bit of teaching down here, again was very active with South Carolina Jewish Historical Society and with other historic groups. And then our 20-year city councilwoman announced that she was going to retire. And so it seemed like this would be a good time for me to take all those things that I had learned about the experiences of Jewish folks in Columbia who'd run for office, the models of activism that people like Susan Brill represented. I saw earlier today Sandra Polyakoff was in here from Columbia, and Sandra was serving on our school board as well. To take the example of people like Harriet Kaiserin, I brought Harriet to Columbia College as one of our visiting professors. She spent a week on our campus, got to know her and the issues that she'd been identified with and the special stories that she had to tell. I also loved and adored Irene Rudnick. I see her now, and doesn't she put a smile on your face when you just think about Irene? I love listening to her
stories. She's a cousin.
There you go. And of course, others like Sylvia Dreyfus I had interviewed. And so thinking about these wonderful models of activism, of commitment, of focus on change, Richard and I talked, and we decided that we would get that I would file to run for this seat on council. And this was in the spring of 08. And as I'm thinking about the stories you've told, you know, I was a little older getting into this, and I think you're a little looser when you get into it at an older age. But where'd we go to first? For support and for engagement and for interest. We went to the Jewish community. And I remember calling and talking with Susan and talking with Sandra and talking with others who had been so active in the community. We immediately called Joel Lurie, Richard's cousin, who was very active in this campaign. And we began to talk about how you put a campaign together. And of course, in a local race, and local races are so much fun. They really are. Because, you know, 10 votes, you can win or lose on 10 votes. Okay? And so finding who knew whom. One of the first things we did was went through the list of everyone who had voted in the prior mayor's race to see who we knew. I ran in a district race, and we didn't see a whole lot of Jewish folks in my district, but we knew that didn't make much difference. What we had to do was find people that knew other members of the Jewish community. And so it was that most basic level of getting organized, and the Jewish community played a key role in that for us. Not only did the Jewish community support my race financially, which was very important. I don't think, Richard, did anybody not give to us in that race? Let me say, it was probably the most expensive city council race in the history of South Carolina. I ran against a well-funded, in fact, you couldn't be any better funded, young man, awfully nice young man, but we knew it was going to be an expensive race when we got into it, and one of the first to donate to my campaign was Alan Ryan, and I remember getting that check from him, and it was great. So we needed funding to run, and we also needed folks engaged in finding people they knew. And boy, the Tree of Life for folks, I mean, they were great. I remember meeting people who would say, oh, I work with Julie Strauss, and she told me, you know, I would go door to door. She told me I had to vote for you. Or Susan Will said so-and-so about you. And so it really became a campaign that capitalized on contacts from the Jewish community, that also capitalized on contacts that I'd made other networks of people. My Columbia College network was absolutely critical in this as well. So we got into the race. It was wonderful, fabulous. Richard, my partner in life, was the partner in this campaign. And he did most of the fundraising work. They did try to hand me a notebook early in the campaign, and they brought some young man to come sit down with me and tell me that I was to make so many calls every day for money. And I slammed that notebook and I said, no way I'm doing this. Okay, and I'll go out there, I'll ring the doorbells, but I'm not going to do this part. Did a little bit of it. The first big gift I got was from someone at Tree of Life, the first really large campaign gift. And we were sitting in a local restaurant in Columbia, and I had already slammed the notebook and said I absolutely refused to raise money for the campaign. And we go in, and Richard said, oh, did you notice that so-and-so's sitting up in front of the restaurant? You need to go up and ask her for $1,000 right now. And I said, I can't do it. I can raise money for anything else, okay? I just don't like raising it for myself. So Richard said, oh, you've got to go ask her. And I said, she won't do it. I'm not going to ask her. So a few minutes later, she walks through, and she's going to the ladies' room. And she stops by her table, and Richard's kicking me. And I know what he wants me to say, and so finally I said, Barbara, would you give me $1,000 for my campaign for city council? And she looked at me right away, absolutely. And so, you know, you get better at it as you move on through. You really do. It gets easier. And again, it without that base of support from the Jewish community, and it wasn't just Tree of Life congregation, Beth Shalom people all over this campaign too. And we put together an effective plan that was funded at the level that it needed to be at, and then election day happens, and I will tell you, we took every precinct. And it was a very big victory. It was a wonderful victory. I do not in any way think those people were voting just for me. They were voting for ideas that had been formulated by people from throughout the community. And so as I got on my seat in council, the issues that I thought I was going to be dealing with primarily were going to center around quality of life, how we live and experience our city on a daily basis. Historic preservation was a big deal. I wanted to make sure that our neighborhoods had the elements in place to continue to draw residents to our community. And we put through some ordinances that looked at what we called community character protection. But I will tell you, much of what I did focused instead on budget matters. and public safety. And those really became the two issues. Always budget. I think 6 weeks into the campaign, I'm sorry, 6 weeks into my service, we realized that $32 million that had been set aside in reserves was no longer there. It had not been stolen. It had simply evaporated in health care costs. Okay? And no one had been minding that store. So much of what I worked on really centered on efforts to put best financial practices back in and then to deal with public safety. There were two times, I'm finishing up my term, would have loved to run again, but fate intervened, and Richard was confirmed in August of 2010, and we pretty much knew at that point that I would not be running again. And so we tried running up and down the interstate. At this stage in life, it doesn't make sense. And so I made my mind up about 6 months after he was down here that this commuter thing wouldn't work out, and I needed to come on down to Charleston. So it's with a lot of it's bittersweet not running again. But I will tell you, there were two things that came up that I thought might interest you, and I'd be curious to see where you have seen issues come up, that I did think that the need to remind my fellow colleagues on council that we are indeed a very diverse community became important. The first one had to do with prayer at city council. And let me say, if any group needed prayer, it was our group, okay? But the problem was whether, the appropriateness of doing it at council. And I would have loved if we had huddled in the hallway, okay, or each said our own silent prayer. But we had a member of council who really wanted us to engage in public prayer. Okay. And so what to do? And I did cast the only vote against the prayer before our council meetings. I made a lot of stink behind the scenes, a little bit of talk in front, and but bottom line, I was the sole vote against implementing prayer at our council meetings. I think the end result of that, though, was that we did, my colleagues did realize that we needed an ecumenical prayer. The first couple of prayers had a lot of Jesus in them, I will tell you that. And I am tickled to death. The prayers now truly have been of an ecumenical nature, and they have come from all segments of the community. So prayer is there. The second matter that came up, and Richard kind of told me not to rant and rave about this one as much, but when we realized we have no money left, and this $32 million is gone, and now we've had the awful October of 08 financial messes going on, and the city really was at a very critical juncture. And we had not had financial reports for 4 or 5 years, and it's sort of unbelievable. But so this is my first 6 months in office, and we realized we have got to make dramatic budget cuts, big time budget cuts. And I'm looking at the budget, and I see $80,000 that is earmarked for the staff Christmas party. And I called the city manager and said, I think it's wonderful to have a party, but I can't support an $80,000 expenditure for the staff Christmas party. I don't think our residents want us playing Santa Claus with their money. Okay? And I am pleased to say necessity truly is the mother of invention. Our situation was so bad that we did get, but we had to eliminate that one. It didn't have to become a matter of great discussion. But the building in, I don't know what y'all have in your budgets for things like that. It never was called a holiday party. It was always the Christmas party. So as I get ready to wind down my service, and my term is over June 30th, I will tell you, we have got to encourage people to run for local office. We've got to do a better job of this than we've done up to this point. We had great difficulty getting people to run for the seat that I held. And we've got to cultivate young people, younger people to run, and we've got to support them. Because if we don't get good people in government at this most basic level, where government touches us the most, we are really going to suffer. And we're going to see our cities, and I think all of us in school districts, decline. So it's been a wonderful experience. It's not one that's been really characterized, I think, at least as I've looked at it, as a Jewish experience. But